It's a shame that all of these jokes will be lost in time, like pee in the rain.
Well, you're painting
instead
of Target on your...
We are recording this, James.
You're painting a sin like, at Target on your back.
Like pee in the rain.
I don't understand that reference.
Jax always falls asleep before the end of that movie.
Oh, is it Blade Runner?
Yeah.
I can't watch it. Uh-huh. I don't know why.
It's probably because of how soothing and quiet it is. I presume.
Well, you know what happens when you presume.
Sometimes you're right.
Sometimes prez.
Yes.
Prez?
But not ident.
Presuming, yeah.
Greetings, Apropossi, and buckle up for the second. It's the Apropos of Nothing podcast.
With your hosts.
Salsa.
James.
Yeah, how did I know James was going to do the cricket noise?
Because I always do the cricket noise.
Yes, I'm aware of that, James. That was... I wasn't asking.
Hey, Salsa, do you know the difference between a joke and a rhetorical question? So anyway, you might have noticed that Jenna's not with us.
Yes, this is when our guest usually says their name.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. One time, so I'm Jack, by the way. One time, I tried to hop in on that thing, and then y'all were like, no, you should have waited. Usually we introduce our desk. Yeah. Yes. So I was just waiting.
What you need to know is that the running gag is that the guest is
always
wrong. Yeah.
Yes. Oh.
Yeah.
I am a capricious god.
It's like Brennan.
It's like life.
Yep. I am a capricious god.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds tasty, actually.
Yeah, in the little silver pouch.
I'll have to have you for lunch sometime.
Straw.
Yeah, with a straw.
Yep.
No. With the mozzarella and the basil.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. Big. It's balsamic.
Yeah.
Anyway, what are you drinking?
A lot.
I made a concoction for us.
Yeah.
I don't have a name for it yet.
Ooh, opportunity.
It is a shot or two of scotch, and then about 50-50 of hard cider and fresh-pressed apple cider. Mixed with, let's see, we've got some star anise, some clove, black pepper, and a cinnamon stick. And it's on ice.
It's like a pumpkin spice Johnny Jump Up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pumpkin Jump Up. But there isn't any pumpkin in it. It's just the spices from pumpkin spice.
It's like a basic Jump Up.
I do not have nutmeg in there. Thank you very much.
Jump Up?
Is that the X factor is the nutmeg?
Jump o' lantern.
What?
Is nutmeg the X factor in what makes it basic?
You'd have to ask Professor Xavier.
If it's pumpkin spice, it needs to have nutmeg as well. Because pumpkin spice is just the spices that spice pumpkin pie.
I'm aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
You have listed other spices.
Mm-hmm.
Which are included in pumpkin spice blends.
I don't think star anise is.
But some of the other ones you said were.
Yeah. All two of them?
Cinnamon and clove and...
But I mean, is the nutmeg the X factor which makes it not pumpkin spice?
It's pretty...
Yeah, because root beer is not pumpkin spice.
Because cinnamon and nutmeg are two of the biggest ones that you have to have for pumpkin spice.
Okay.
But I digress. So what are you drinking? Wait, he took a sip.
Yeah, we gotta take a sip of ours too.
Yeah, you bored me.
The semantics of a topic that you brought up bore you, Salsa? Yeah.
Yep.
Oh.
That's usually how it goes. He'll usually lose focus, his eyes will drift off to the sides, and he'll start imagining hockey.
What do you think, honey?
I think this is quite tasty.
Good.
Oh, you're both thinking the same?
I put less booze in his because I know him too well.
Yeah.
What about you? What are you drinking?
I am drinking from Al Ringling Brewing Company in Baraboo, Wisconsin. I am drinking a Luawana Lady.
Ooh.
Yes. The Luawana Lady is I believe it was tangerine.
Ooh, ale.
Damn.
That sounds delicious.
That does sound good.
Yeah, let me double check that, but I believe it was a tangerine.
Make a plan to go see some shows out in Baraboo, because I've heard that they get fire performers out there.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
I've heard they're weirdos, though.
I mean, they're fire performers.
Right, that's what I said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is tangerine IPA.
What? Ah.
So.
IPA. The tangerine part's great, but like...
No, here's the thing. The Ringling Brewing Company does not subscribe to the death by hops IPA.
Sure.
Philosophy.
That's good.
They hops go with love. The let's make it taste good IPA yeah. philosophy. So even their IPAs are palatable as opposed to.
I've always found.
Let's see how much pops we could put in.
I've always found that like Surly was too much.
Although
yeah. Surly Darkness is quite good.
Yeah, but Surly was one of those death by pops.
Yeah.
Brands. Yeah.
No, absolutely.
That was their selling point, was how many hops can we get in here?
Jesus.
It's like Panera and gluten. Yeah,
there was a period of time a while back when IPAs were all about how bitter they could get them.
Oh and, yeah.
Thankfully, we're starting to hedge away from that a little bit.
To be fair, I only like porters and stouts. So I, no matter what it is, there if it has hops included, I probably don't want it. Even if it is a like sane amount of hops, it's not my cup of beer.
Sure. So. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. In fact, I usually don't like IPAs, but.
But that one's good. Good. That's a ringing endorsement.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a Ringling endorsement.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Jenna!
What? That wasn't even a pun.
Oh, God,
that
was cannot just... hear you.
Jenna's God cannot hear me.
That wasn't even a pun. That was just truth.
Yeah.
So what you been up to?
Lots.
Cool. All right, moving on.
So we had our annual Over the Garden Wall watch party, which is always a great time. A lot of our regular attendees were out of town for a wedding.
Or sick.
Or just sick.
Or tired. Or yeah. The week hit them like a ton of bricks.
Yeah. So it ended up being a relatively small but steadfast crowd. Yeah. And that meant that there was more food for everybody and more drinks for everybody and more places to sit and lounge as well, which is not a bad thing. That means that, you know, good either way. But yeah, we had a wonderful time. It became a tradition because it's just heartwarming and glorious. And then we followed that up with a watch of Young Frankenstein. Also
classic,
great, yeah. And then we discovered just how many of our friends have never seen Young Frankenstein, which I thought was mandatory viewing in high school. Found out it isn't. All right, so there was that, and then on Saturday, many things happened. I dropped Jax off at a thing that I'm sure they'll probably discuss. And then
Saturday?
Yeah, you were at a distillery.
Oh shit, you're right.
Yeah. and then I went to a murder mystery party where I had been called in as a ringer. The person who was supposed to play the victim's wife had gotten ill, and so they needed someone to fill in on very short notice, and decided that I would be good at being very subtly cutting and like gently rude to all of the guests. So they brought me in. I did the thing. I won trophies for stuff. And many people were convinced that I did it. I did not.
Usually you only get trophies for being an asshole at Vilton. So this is a brand new platform for you.
That's true. But yeah, then went back to the distillery and enjoyed. They have wonderful whiskey there, but they also have like
O'Shaughnessy whiskey.
Amazing mocktails as well. Mm-hmm. And I had a beautiful beverage made out of ginger and jalapeno, which was exactly what I needed. So there was that. And then we attended the Horror Fest. Did the thing.
I did a thing.
And saw some of the plays that Jenna was talking about last week. There are still several show dates, but I will also let our guest talk more about that. Yeah, and then just mostly those things. That was I've helped my dad pick out a computer, which is an adventure, but also not especially entertaining. So I'm mostly just throwing that out there as a bid for pity. Mm-hmm. So Salsa, what have you been up to?
Lots of things, actually. I had quite a busy week. Ooh. My anniversary was this week.
Oh.
My wife and I have been married 15 years.
Wow. Don't you get a mug for that?
I get a mug whenever I fucking want to. I'm an adult.
There's that too. He has many mugs.
We kind of split our anniversary up a little bit. We were going to do dinner in a theater, but we did dinner one night and theater the other night.
Nice.
So on Wednesday we went to the Guthrie Theater and we saw a show called All the Devils Are Here.
Ooh.
And it is a show by a fabulous actor who usually plays villains.
Aaron and Abby saw the show.
Yep. Uh-huh. So a guy by the name of Patrick Page.
Yeah.
He has been Hades in Hadestown. Mm. He has been He has been Scar in the Broadway Lion King. He has like all of those villains with the voices. He's been them.
His voice is amazing.
But he did a fabulous one-man show about how Shakespeare invented the villain.
Oh.
And it's really, really, really good. He talks about how before Shakespeare, villains were usually very one-dimensional. They were like in a lot of the plays, the theater, whenever there was a villain, that villain was usually a personification of a vice. In fact, that's what they were called. They weren't called villains. They were called vices. Because at that point in time, villain just meant a laborer, you know, a common man was a villain. Somebody who was not of the nobility. So they were vices, you know, and so you would have a play whereby, you know, avarice would be a character, or you would have a play whereby jealousy would be a character, and they would come in and they would like, that was their motivation. They were a vice.
Yeah.
You know, very and they would
thick
try
track
to, exactly.
Theater.
But then Shakespeare came along and you've kind of followed the evolution of Shakespeare's voice with creating his villains. So at the beginning of his career, when he was still new, writing his first few plays, you have characters like Aaron the Moor, who was a black man, and you have Shylock the Jew, and you have Richard III, who was misshapen. It was the prevailing idea at the time was if there was a physical difference,
yeah,
a physical other, then that also
minority?
Meant yes, that there was a that also meant that you were morally, you know, in the minority as well. Yeah. So you know, people that were crippled were less than, you know, they were more prone to vice, and black people were clearly criminals, and Jews were all greedy bastards, you know. And so, like, his first villains were that stereotype of mm-hmm. of, well, if we want a bad guy, he's going to be physically deformed, or he's going to be black, or he's going to be a Jew. That's right. Just
right
how things are, you know. The good Christian white men are paragons of virtue, and everybody else is
always.
Is morally morally less, you know, which again was how things were back then. That was a very widespread idea.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, some people still think that today. We won't go into that.
Right.
He does bring that up at one point without explicitly saying it, but he did talk about how, you know,
it
was heavily implied. but then he talks about how as you know, Shakespeare fell in love with this woman who we don't know much about her, but we do know that she was a had dark hair, darker skin, and dark eyes. And so, like, because of that, and also there was a plague, you may have heard of it, kind of went through. And so a lot of his theater, there wasn't a lot of theater. And so this is when he was writing a lot of his poetry. Mm. And he was developing this love poetry, and kind of, he posits that this is kind of where he started to see that minorities aren't necessarily inferior. Because coming out of this period of time, this is when we start getting more interesting, you know, baddies that have motivations as opposed to
a reason
inherent, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We start to see nuance and
moral failings. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So this is when you start getting characters that have, you know, reasons for doing what they're doing. You know,
good writing.
Yeah, exactly. But right. Again, before this point, that wasn't a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, this is where Iago, comes from, where, you know, the black man is not the bad guy. You know, he's a sociopath. He's psychopathic. He's just bad. Not because he's
Iago.
Yes, yeah, Iago. Yeah. Yes. And things like that, like Claudius in Hamlet, you know, talking about Claudius in Hamlet knows that he has done wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, famously, there's the scene in Hamlet where Claudius is praying to make, you know, his guilt, you know, because he's feeling the bad things that he did. He killed his brother, you know, And so, like, they're wrestling with that concept of, yes, he's the bad guy, and he knows he's the bad guy, but he's got complex motivations. And then that culminates slowly, eventually, to some of the last plays that he wrote, like Macbeth, where, you know, both Macbeth and Lady Macbeth have these very complex, you know, motivations, and mm-hmm. they know that they are doing wrong, but they still go through with it because of their, you know, desires, or, you know,
right, or because
various things.
Each one is in their turn trying to be good, or going through
right
grief or second thoughts, but then the other one is there at the exactly the wrong moment,
exactly, you know. And then once the deed is done, they wrestle with that guilt, and they have those complex feelings. And so it just, like, and this was, you know, an hour and a half process to get to this point, where he really kind of lays out, the slow evolution of the villain character as it was spun out. And you can really see, and once you kind of see that, you can kind of look at a bunch of his other plays and kind of, even if you don't know if this was an early piece or a late piece or a middle piece, just based on the villain, you can kind of go, oh, I think it's probably one of his early pieces. And you'd kind of be right.
I'm guessing that just like, because of that, Much Ado About Nothing was probably an earlier piece.
Well, metric.
Unfortunately, I don't have an idea.
I think it was,
but again, Much Ado, he's got that jealousy. He is that character who admits that he has these feelings. You know, he has desires. He wants to be a bad guy. He wants to because he's jealous of his brother and stuff like that. So he does have more. He does have more complicated emotions and more complicated reasons for doing what he is doing, as opposed to just being he's a Jew or he's a hunchback.
Having to explain why.
Exactly.
Now, I'm wondering, did he talk about the queer, like later and more recently, the fact that like Scar and all these Disney villains?
He didn't go into that. Yeah, he didn't. He didn't really go into that. This was very much a deconstruction of Shakespeare.
Okay.
And what his villains were, you know.
But like, it totally makes sense that like all the villains in Disney are super queer, because queerness, quote unquote, I want the people
the queer coding.
That queerness is inherently bad.
Yep.
And they don't really need a reason besides being queer for us to know that they're the villain. Like we get a little bit of an explanation with Ursula, but not a ton with Scar, not a ton with like, we get a little bit with Scar. Mm-hmm. We get a little bit with all of them, but like,
And like a lot of the fairy tales that they're based on, you've got the ugly stepmother or the,
exactly. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't get into the queer coding or any of those other things. This was very, very much on.
Gotcha.
But what's really cool is that you can like follow it through.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that it would have been an interesting layer to add. Yeah. But this was already an hour and a half of really interesting talk, and that would have added another
one
45 minutes
that I've heard recently, and it may even have been a discussion of this show. Mm. Let me know if it's not. Was the idea that Queen Macbeth can be read as not being a villain, in like she can be read in different ways, so that she's not like very frequently she gets sort of like backed into the corner of avarice and
is not something he talked about here, but it is a conversation that I know I have had, I think, with you recently, because I went and saw Macbeth a few weeks back.
Oh yeah, that's right. So you and I may have talked about it even here on the
podcast. I think it's possible, but yeah, the fact that that Lady Macbeth can either be very cold or she can be very, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Determined and
right.
What's that called?
yeah.
You aspire.
A woman.
When you aspire to things.
Yeah. It's the same word that I was reaching for and couldn't find.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody knows what we're talking about. That but yeah.
Pointed.
She can be interpreted in a few different ways, and that was actually when the show got done. My wife and I, we went and saw this. My wife is a theater teacher. She teaches Shakespeare. This is something that was really her meat and potatoes, was going through this. And she was absolutely like, this is some really cool stuff. And she loved it. So you knew it was good. But we got done and, you know, lights go up, everybody, you know, applauds, And we get up to start to leave. And over the announcer goes, if you want to stick around in about 5 minutes, we will have a talk back. And my wife and I just went, and we sat back down. and we went to the talk, and my wife was actually in line, to ask almost that question of, the way Shakespeare villains especially can be interpreted different ways based on the actor and kind of the way you're reading it. And unfortunately, they cut her off just like the person in front of her.
Yeah, basically the way it usually goes. Yeah.
Which was unfortunate, but you know, not the end of the world. The other people asking questions asked fantastic questions, but we were just like, yes, we managed to do the talk back as well. But it was a really, really, really fantastic show. And of course he throughout it, he would kind of talk about, you know, his research and his experience playing these different Shakespearean actors and stuff like that. And then he would, you know, inhabit that character and, you know, have a different voice and a unique voice for each one and a portrayal. And it was fantastic. And he did talk about at the beginning that he was going to be playing characters that he normally would not be able to play. And that, you know, just so you know, I would never be able to play Othello. I would never be able to play Lady Macbeth. These are characters I would not presume to inhabit. But for the sake of our conversation here, I will be playing these roles at various points. And
that's a really good thing to like say, like, hey, I recognize I'm not black, so I'm not going to try to like play this in the future. Yeah. But also, this is a one-man show, and I can only do so much.
I have a point I'm trying to make, and so I am going to read these lines, and I'm going to portray this character as best I can.
Right.
The line between appropriation and appreciation.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, he was very clear about that. But then he talked about, you know, the difference. At the very end, very, very end, you've got the Tempest with Prospero. Mm. Who is this villain who is redeemed at the end? You know, the villain becomes no longer a villain, and you have this story of redemption way, way at the end of Shakespeare's writing career. It finally kind of comes full circle where the villain has these complex reasons for doing it, and then has that change of heart and decides to switch it up and no longer be the villain. And it was just absolutely fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Highly, highly recommended. If you get to Guthrie and are able to go see All the Devils Are Here, How Shakespeare Invented the Villain, it is fantastic. It's running up until November 17th.
Ooh.
So still got time. Still got time. Super good.
We could take my mom to that
for her birthday.
Yeah.
I was just thinking. So I was
Because she'll love it. That's why. Yeah.
Yep.
Definitely not for any,
you know,
particularly self-serving, selfish reasons.
No, I was in a Disney-esque musical improv show called Rated G at Huge, RIP. And one of the things that we had to like learn or relearn is that villains don't always get redemption. Mm-hmm. Because nowadays we're really used to villains getting redemption and they get to like be the you know, have this redemption story. But it's like, remember most of Disney before like Lilo and Stitch is they die, they get murdered, they get turned into a frog and presumably squished later. Like
they get torn apart by hyenas.
Yeah.
They,
so the redemption thing is not. It's so interesting that Shakespeare had redemption at the end of his career, just like we went back to non-redemption villains, and now we're getting back into redemption villains, and kind of like mirrored that within more modern like movie stories. Well,
and some people have talked about like when Maverick came out, the sequel to Top Gun came out. A lot of people were talking about the complex narrative structure being. Very even though it had complexity and depth, that it was not like interwoven or braided or anything like that. That it was like you saw what you saw, everything happened. It happened the way that you saw it.
Mm-hmm.
There's the complexity is in these character dynamics and not necessarily in the story. The story is we get in the airplanes, they go pew pew, stuff blows up, And then the hero lands and the day is saved. Everything's great.
Yep.
You know, and not, there's no twist. There's no, and I've watched a couple of really good dissections on modern filmmaking, postmodern filmmaking,
mm-hmm.
post-postmodern filmmaking, mm-hmm. where we're at with like Everything Everywhere All at Once and that kind of stuff. And like, yeah. So villainy, when you like look at James Bond villains also kind of follow the Shakespeare arc, starting with just, oh, he's evil because he's got a giant scar across his face.
Exactly.
He's a bad guy.
Yeah.
There's a physical manifestation of the evil within. Yeah.
And then James Bond is the handsome, dashing, mysterious
guy. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And then toward the end of like the more recent
mm-hmm.
Bonds, even in the Brosnan era, you had people who were, I mean, still broad caricatures, but they had a backstory. They had a reason.
Motivations that were complex as opposed to I'm a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know.
I have an interesting question.
Mm? Yeah.
So very on point with why I'm here, the Twin Cities Horror Fest.
Oh.
Would you say that horror is when villains have won and have the threat of continuing to win?
Hmm. I think that it's...
Because if with horror, like, there is a part of, let's say a horror film or movie or story is being locked in a house with a murderer.
Yeah.
They have already murdered before.
Mm-hmm.
This has become, this is a thing that has happened oftentimes, mm-hmm. ritual, oftentimes. Yeah,
they need to establish the danger.
Exactly.
Right. Posed to the main character by killing someone off fairly early.
Right. Or they have killed someone in the past and it's about to happen again.
Right. Yeah.
It's very infrequent.
You got to raise the stakes.
Michael Myers has returned.
Has returned, right?
You got to raise the stakes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm interested to see, like, I can think of a horror film where it's somebody's first snap, but they still have to have won in some way to corner or to have the power to be a threat.
Yeah. Well, and usually
they have to have cornered somebody. They have to have trapped somebody. Yeah. They have to have done something.
Mm-hmm. Like,
I can think of two or three different like major ending archetypes.
Mm.
One of them is very much like early Disney villain, pushed off a cliff, lands on a spike, torn apart by hyenas, blown up, shot, lit on fire, and then the pieces are fired into the sun, right? And then during the end credits, you get the like melted gloved hand out of the surface of the sun, mm-hmm. right? To, you know, the end question mark.
Right. And that is a trope I fucking hate.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
But talking about Scar, that's not necessarily a horror thing. That's not a horror movie.
No, Lion King is not a horror.
I was just like broadly saying like a bunch of different things happen to show you that the villain is dead.
Oh, yeah.
And then
that is a trope.
Right.
Yeah.
But then the next one is if fucking everyone dies or someone escapes.
You got to leave one to warn the others. But
the villain is never killed on screen,
mm-hmm.
and so the message of the film is
mm-hmm.
it's still out there.
Yeah,
this could happen to you. Mm-hmm. The murderer is still at large, which is also kind of the point of like the hand out of the grave or out of the whatever. That's the thing there. Like the threat is still there.
I guess I'm more focusing on the beginning or the setup of a film though.
Okay.
The premise of a film. Because the premise, like if you're talking about 13 Ghosts.
Sure.
Spoiler alert. 13 Ghosts is about a bunch of ghosts who have killed people and murked people, put them on a hashtag.
Yeah.
And it's about to happen again.
Yeah.
13 Ghosts is about this awful thing that has happened. These serial killers, these whatever that have been killing, setting up the horror for it's about to happen again. Mm-hmm. It's this established villain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Does that click, or does that feel right?
I think the difference between like a drama with a villain like this and a horror movie or horror is with something like a Shakespearean drama, the target is an individual that is being targeted because of one specific reason. Whereas in horror, the target is
anyone.
It could be you. It could be the person next door. It could be anyone.
Yeah.
Whereas with a dramatic piece, the villain is against this specific group. This is their target. This is why they're doing this. And with a horror, it's an everyman, or it is society or existential.
The most chilling lines in horror was someone says, like, why are you doing this to us? And the villains say, you were home.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a lot of people have said, like, that movie in particular is what especially chilling. Mm-hmm. It's the movie The Strangers.
Oh, okay.
So the which is now more than a decade old, so I don't feel bad. Like, that's a minor spoiler. But the things like Jason or Freddy, or a lot of them are set up as moral tales,
mm-hmm.
very similar to the like moral plays that they had that Shakespeare would have sort of started or been rooted in.
Yeah, the foundations of what he was doing.
Just before the Renaissance, and the like, when do the teenagers get killed at Camp Crystal Lake? They get killed when they're fucking. They get killed when they're drinking. They get killed when they're
teenaging.
Basically, being teenage. But that means that the final girl, capital T, capital F, capital G, the final girl is the one who didn't sleep with anybody, wasn't drinking.
It's a morality play.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely a morality play in early horror. And even like Friday the 13th, Freddy is out for revenge on these children because of the sins of their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the entire thing. Lots and lots of horror up until probably the early 2000s was very much like, you did a bad thing, mm-hmm. and now the
villain. I know what you did last summer.
Back. Yes, absolutely. Or even like, weirdly, Children of the Corn. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of that. But there are also,
I guess what I was commenting on is the through line of like the established villain.
Sure.
Though.
You have a report of something bad happening,
mm-hmm.
or a history of something bad happening.
And it's about to happen again.
The villain is back.
Yep.
But that's not even necessarily all. I mean, I guess like if you look at Hocus Pocus, that's the entirety of Hocus Pocus.
Nobody like, hold on. Well, I suppose Hocus Pocus, but that is true.
It's people about do die.
People mm-hmm. do die. It is.
It's a horror comedy.
It is a horror comedy.
Yeah.
It is a kids horror comedy, which is even more impressive.
Yeah.
So I would agree with that. It's a kids horror comedy, and it's mm-hmm. also, I think, a part of horror is there is no redemption for these villains. There isn't a redemption for the villains. They either win or they don't, and the win condition is, do they do the bad thing or not?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think with most horror, it's, do they win now or do they win later?
Ooh.
Or are they on the brink of winning? This was the third thing.
Yeah,
they're on the brink of ending the world, using their creature.
There's an inevitability about it.
And then the hero delays sacrifices it. Themselves,
yeah.
or they, you know, do exactly the right thing at the right time by accident or whatever. The hero ends up in the way of that plan, mm-hmm. and then the machinations of that villain turn against the mad mm-hmm. scientist, turn against yep. the cult leader, turn mm-hmm. against the whatever, mm-hmm. and consume. Yeah,
well, I mean, that's when you get the parable horror movies. The zombie movies are about consumerism. Godzilla is about nuclear war. You know, you get those parables. You know, that are through lines. But
I had written a long article about different movie monsters and what which of the seven deadly sins they equated to in my mind. Mm. And for me, zombies were gluttony.
Mm-hmm.
Just makes sense, right? It is gluttony so powerful it's contagious. And the thing that I think people enjoy about zombie apocalypse movies and stories and whatever is the idea that they will be tasked to survive against something that is human shaped.
Mm.
And that they will be able to commit mm-hmm. acts of violence with impunity, and no one will blame them if mm. anyone is even around, but that they will be fully testing themselves against someone or something that is human-like, but that is very black and white in survival and not survival.
I feel mm-hmm. like not all monster movies are horror movies, though.
Oh, very true.
I think that, like, some monster movies can be horror movies, yeah. but not all of them have to be.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say Godzilla is a horror movie.
I think that, like, the ISBN, you know, or whatever the classification is, the MPAA, that's what I'm looking for. The MPAA rating for it is that it is a horror movie. But, and that's just because people fucking die.
Is Day After Tomorrow a horror movie?
I think that is a disaster movie.
What's the difference? Because I feel like Godzilla is a disaster movie.
Godzilla is a disaster movie, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, because it's a natural. Sure.
Salsa, where would you say that Godzilla falls? Is that a horror movie? It's definitely a monster movie.
It's a...
Some kaiju films are flat out horror. Like, I would say Pacific Rim has,
I think it would depend on which one you're talking about.
Yeah. Mm. Cloverfield is absolutely horror.
That's, I also can't watch it without getting seasick. So, like,
there's that.
but it's interesting. I wonder if the difference is intention.
Hmm.
Does Godzilla mean to fuck your shit up?
Well,
do the aliens in Cloverfield mean to fuck your shit up?
I think it's a holdover from the 1950s B-movie sci-fi. Like, giant ants or...
Them,
sorry. I was thinking of the Fallout 3 reference to them. But that's just person against nature. But it's a monster movie, and it was considered horror in its day. I don't know.
So the Twin Cities Horror Fest is on right now.
Cool.
Yeah. So if you want to see some good horror,
yeah,
go to that.
Very little Godzilla.
Very little.
Anyway. So my date.
Yes.
So we went and saw All the Devils Are Here. And then on Saturday, I took my wife out to the Creekside Supper Club, mm-hmm. which is also highly recommended for anybody who wants a real fancy date night.
Wow. Ooh,
you know, a big hoity-toity pinky up dinner date. They got some real nice steaks. I had a 16 ounce ribeye, and my wife had like filet mignon, and we had like wine. I had a Tempranillo that was just like velvet on the tongue. It was so good. Yeah, super, super good. And then they gave us our dessert for free because it was our anniversary. They do a really good thing. I got our reservation online. And when you make a reservation online, I don't know if they do this over the phone as well, if they just ask you these questions, but when you do it over the online, you choose time frame and how many people and stuff, and then a little questionnaire pops up that's like, are you celebrating something? If so, what? Do you have allergies? Please let us know, and stuff like that. So, you know, I had put down that I have a fresh fruit allergy and stuff like that. So, like, we get there, we order our food, and then the waitress at one point comes out and says, so just wanted to check on you. One thing, you said you have fresh fruit on your allergy list. Is lemon okay? And it was just like, absolutely, that's fine. It was like, cool. So they can use lemon juice and they're preparing our meal and everything. But the chefs have that information right in front of them when you're like, we're ordering this meal for this table. The chefs can go, okay, there's allergies on here. What do we need to avoid? What we get, and stuff like that. So we're doing a really great job there. The wait staff were fantastic. The cocktails were delicious. The wine was great. The steak was perfect. Highly, highly recommend that one. Also, it's a pricier place. You're going to pay for it. But again, if you're celebrating a big 15th anniversary, you go crazy.
Nice.
So that was Saturday. And then on Sunday was our birthday party for my wife's father, which means we went to our annual trip to Moscow on the Hill. And had all the vodka. Amazing. And also food, but also vodka. So super good. I have been eating really well the past few days, and boy howdy do I probably need to see the inside of a gym or something like that.
I imagine you walking in and being like, that's enough. All right. I got my steps in.
Yep. I came, I saw it. Yeah, exactly. I ate really good. I have stopped pretending that I'm even going to look at the menu anymore. Like, I used to delude myself walking into Moscow on the Hill going, I'm going to look at the menu and I'm going to try to choose some. And now I'm just like, no, I know what I want. I walk in there. I know exactly what I want. I get the same thing every year because it's so fucking good. And this is the one place I can get it. So that's what I'm getting. I don't even need to see the menu. I know what I know exactly what I'm getting.
Cabbage roll?
Huh?
Is it the cabbage roll?
No, it's the pork loin.
Oh,
with the SARS medallions. It's a poor pork loin with that cheese and mushroom sauce on top. And then I get the horseradish vodka martini.
Yeah.
And then for dessert, I get a shot of honey vodka.
Yeah.
And then because it's my wife's father's birthday, he buys a round of pepper vodka for the table. Wonderful. And we all do a toast with that. So
cool.
Yeah, no, we eat and drink real good at that place.
Yeah.
That's what I've been up to is
fantastic.
Being married for a long time.
Hey,
that's what I did. So
good work.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Should we take a break?
I mean, I guess.
I haven't said it. Shit all of what I'm doing, but
we usually do
that's what after
nobody cares.
Oh,
wow. I feel so welcome and loved in this space.
You are this one,
not the one,
not the overarching
the one that has my one. Husband in it.
Yeah
I'm not gonna put on airs around here.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure he's busy.
Yep.
Oh yeah. All right, a break.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brandon Patton was kind enough to give us the music for this episode and every episode. You can see what he's up to at brandonpatton.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, but especially you can help us out by rating our show. Check out our merch. You can go to society6.com/AON podcast.
Hi, Salsa.
And we're back. I'm Salsa.
God damn it, I'm James.
I already introduced myself, and if it isn't edited in that I'm Jax, it's Salsa's fault.
Well, you just did, so there you go.
Yep.
Sorry, I was kind of zoned out there for a second. What's going on?
Jax is doing a thing.
I am doing a thing. Currently, I'm knitting.
Neither of us will
ever know. So I am in Twin Cities Horror Fest. It's my first time in Twin Cities Horror Fest. Oh. And it is my first time being in a theater production where I have to move in a wheelchair. So I was in Murder on the Mississippi, and I had a role where I just sat in one place. So there wasn't much like conversation on how to make it work. A few weeks ago, Duck Washington was like, "Hey, somebody dropped out. Can we have you in our show of Fractured Remembrances?" And I was like, "Yes." And then I went, "I probably should have told you I come with a wheelchair, and several like medical things." And, but when I had typed up like, "Hey, this is what I have," he's like, "We'll figure it out," which is wonderful. And so like, in the show, I use my wheelchair cause I have POTS, and POTS to the point where, oftentimes walking is hard and I don't get to choose which days are my walking days and which days are my rolling days. And so I just, we have figured out the show with me just in my wheelchair, for all of the performances. And, it's been a really interesting like experience and a really good experience because I feel really, taken care of and like listened to and heard by, the people who are working there. Nobody can remember the last time there was a wheelchair user at the Crane Theater.
Mm.
So there are several things that are interesting
challenges
for it. And thankfully I'm an ambulatory wheelchair user, so it's a little less, complicated than it could be. Because I can get out of my wheelchair briefly if I need to and things like that. But yeah, anyway, that's so like, it's a huge milestone, not only in being in Horror Fest, but also like, this is the first show that I've been in where I'm moving and doing things and in a wheelchair. And that's been really enlightening in a lot of ways. So, really exciting too. Our show's really fun and really good.
Yeah.
I get to do a lot of light work. So a lot of our lighting is by flashlight, and what I am doing oftentimes is using a flashlight to light the scene. And what's really cool is that being in a chair in a wheelchair is actually like beneficial because it's almost like I'm on my own little dolly with the light and the flashlight. So I can rest it on my leg and move the wheelchair, and it doesn't waver or move in an organic way. It moves like it's a movie scene.
Yeah.
And so that's been a lot of fun to play with and a lot of fun to see like, oh yeah. Like, yes, there's the trope of, you know, oh, you can make a good thing out of a bad thing, and your disability can be beautiful. But like, honestly, it's actually really cool. Like within this show, to be able to see that, personally. But yeah, so the show that I'm in is Fractured Remembrances, and a girl. It is Angela Fox. It's written by Duck Washington and directed and soundscaped and then Angela Fox is the main character, and it's her first horror show.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, the first time they did the sound of a gong, it was Tech Night, and we had the sound of the gong, and all you heard was, ah! Whenever it happened, you just heard Angela go, ha! Ha! Ha!
She did a good job getting used to it. She
really did. She is a consummate actor. But that first night, she's never done this sort of like work before. And it's been a lot of fun watching and like watching her work in a new genre that she's amazing at. And I get to work with like Rob Ward, and I get to work with just like so many at Ariel again, because I was in the Striker with Ariel, and Ariel is Ariel. I'll just if you've seen Ariel Pinkerton in anything, I will let you imagine what her character is like. But I was in
the being careful not to give anything away.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I was in Striker with her years ago. And so like, it's been really fun sharing the stage with her again. And Kyle Decker did the, effects. I won't say anything else. It's not like dangerous production.
I mean, nothing else is.
It's not like that. We don't have to use all 10 of our minutes wiping up gore from the floor. Yeah,
right. I mean, Tarantino looks at dangerous productions and goes, maybe you want to rein it in a little bit there.
And didn't they do a clown, Dr. Clown this year?
Yeah, they're doing Dr. Clown
this
year.
Oh my gosh. I really want to see it.
I do want to see it. I was always sad that I missed one of the first productions of theirs that I heard about was The Itch.
That sounds awful.
And
I don't know if I'd want to see that from Dangerous Production.
It was so gruesome.
Yeah.
That somebody in the audience, my memory of hearing about this was that they did have people planted in the audience.
Oh.
But that there was somebody in the audience who had a legitimate, full-on episode as a result of seeing this happen. And they had to legitimately stop the show and say, everyone, this is not part of the show. This person is having a medical issue. People are going to show up and assist. And then we're going to do our best to get on with the show before the end, because I think it was part of Fringe. And so
the question is, did they see that, like, secretly? Is that a feather in their cap? Without saying it out loud, though, if you as a horror company...
William Castle would think so.
They're doing Dr. Clown. Yeah. We're doing Fractured Remembrances. We have three more shows.
What days are those?
We have a show on Tuesday, probably the day that this comes out.
It'll probably be just before this podcast comes out.
At 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. And then we have one on Friday at the 10:30 show, which actually is the best day to have the 10:30 show. Oh, so excited. And then we have one on Sunday, November 3rd at 6 p.m.
Wonderful.
And I'm really excited and I really love it. And like, it's been a wonderful experience being a part of the Twin Cities Horror Festival. I'm also going to be putting some of my stickers and such into the Goblin Market.
Oh, yeah.
There is a super small secret, like, closeted area where you can find wares from the artists that are in the Horror Fest. And so there are some scarves, there are some bottles, there's some like really cool things just littered in this tiny Goblin Market. If you go past the restrooms on the right, you can find it. And it's this very tucked away, secret-y, kind of like almost like a mystery egg. That you get to find. And it's really cool. There's a lot of other really cool merch. And they have a mocktail bar this year, which is so cool. They have the one that I like is the AF. It is a alcohol-free line of mocktails, but it also has something in it that gives you the
herbs and spices.
Herbs and spices that give you the warm, fuzzy feeling that, like, juice doesn't. It's just, like, it's not THC, it's not CBD, it's not, but it's, like, you know, it's under sober, wraps. Sober,
but it gives you, like,
a nice little fuzzy feeling. And I really like AF. And so they have that there. They've got, a mojito thing there. They've got quite a few things.
I enjoyed the lime mojito. I was told by Jenna that it is not minty enough.
Yeah. Well,
that's Jenna.
Jenna. So probably not salty enough for her either, but you know, whatever. I love you, Jenna. But yeah, so like that's super cool. And they have, they've just got a lot of really cool stuff there. The vibe is on point. Honestly, well,
we got to see one of the shows that Jenna talked about that is a sellout risk. The Blacklight puppet show called The Alchemist Bargain. And that is full on amazing. Every show I'm expecting is going to be full on amazing. I've seen two so far. I get to see more soon.
What's nice about the Horror Fest is it's like Fringe Festival without the coin flip of whether it's going to be good or bad.
It could either be the most amazing thing you've seen, or it could be like, well, that's Fringe.
Or it can be, I'm walking out and get it in trouble. Fringe has that. Yeah, and the thing is, we need Fringe. Yeah. We need the ability to have unjured like theater. I understand that. I get it. I've been in Fringe. I've been in bad Fringe. I've been in good Fringe. But like the nice thing about Twin Cities Horror Fest is that it's kind of all just good. It's like, oops, all bangers. Shows are so good in it. And the Alchemist Bargain is kid friendly.
They say hell once, and that's it.
But it's also very like tragic in the Shadow of the Colossus sort of way.
So if you enjoy melancholy, but also like adventure and
puppetry. Oh my God. Their puppetry was so good.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It is.
And
it's
like,
fantastic.
It's
and the
really,
effects are good.
It's really hard to like talk about my show and I'm like trying to stay tight lipped. I think our show is amazing, especially with the lighting and with everything.
Yeah, I
think our show is amazing. I also like can't say too much, so I'm trying to shut up about it, but I don't have to do that with the Alchemist Bargain. And I'm like, oh my God, you should see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You should also see my show.
Well, one of the things about both shows that I really appreciate, I want to say it was like 2017, 2018 that the Fringe Festival had a program from a group called Hit the Lights, and the program was called Dungeon.
Mm.
And Dungeon was all hand lit. And all of the effects were produced with lighting and with puppetry and like clever use of scrims.
Mm-hmm.
And so the handheld lighting in your show is used to extremely powerful effect, which I absolutely expect from a director like Doc.
Oh, yeah.
But then in The Alchemist Bargain,
it's a general blacklight.
Not just the general blacklight, but then the way that fabric is used, the way that different puppets get swapped in for things, the way that
multiple people can work the same puppet.
Right. Oh, God.
The Alchemist has multiple hands that aren't just two.
Yeah.
One thing that I will say about the lighting for my show that's really fun is... the combination of being able to use the flashlights as well as the like general lights and being able like in my chair, being able to, I know I talked about this before, but like being able to go down and light from below.
Yeah. Yeah. There were particular scenes where the angle of the lighting was extremely poignant.
Thanks. That's my fault.
Yeah.
If it's angled lighting from below, it's my fault because wheelchair.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just really exciting. I would say that I'm more excited about Twin Cities Horror Fest than Fringe Show personally.
I believe it.
Yeah, it's just really good. Salsa, have you been to Twin Cities Horror Fest?
Nope.
Do you wanna?
Nah.
Okay.
Salsa's not big into
horror.
Well,
yes.
Got it.
And lots of people is the other thing.
That's fair.
But yeah, mostly yeah. He has expressed tendencies around horror. So yeah.
I highly recommend the horror festival for people who are of that oeuvre, but it is not my bag.
Not that I'm telling you what to do. But if you
I once told Salsa to have a good day, and he yelled at me and said, "You don't get to tell me what to do."
I highly suggest, if you are horror adverse or have kids, I highly suggest Alchemist Bargain.
I'm not horror adverse. I just don't like it.
I would still suggest Alchemist Bargain. It isn't technically horror in what the story is, but not how it's told. I still suggest it. But if you want to see my show, you better like a little bit more of existential horror.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was good, but wow. And also, wow.
And also.
Yeah. Cool. So we'll post the link for that so that people can grab tickets. And anything else about Horror Fest? It runs through, I believe, this weekend.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Sunday's its last day. Yep. It's a lot of fun. And, like, honestly, even just the lobby is super aesthetic.
I've been bumping into so many people. People I did not expect from other states.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like California and shit.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It was very
It's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
I bumped into frenemy of the podcast, Pedantic Eric.
This festival has garnered a lot of attention in a lot of places.
Really?
So
well yeah, and the
I don't know this.
The number of seats, like the number of shows that are getting just solidly sold out, is enormous, and the number of like even the shows that don't sell out are full, not like to the brim, but like maybe a handful of seats left. Yeah. Jesus. Yeah. It is very different from a lot of it reminds me of kind of the Gordon Ramsay ideal when he's fixing a restaurant. And they're like, here are the 30 things on our menu. And he says, do 12 things, but do them the best.
Mm-hmm.
And use the stuff that you are on the water, catch fish. Send somebody out, get fish, or go to the local fish market and get fish cheaply. Stop. You have frozen fish. Stop doing that. Mm-hmm. Stop ordering fish from the, you know, across whatever.
Fair. Yeah. Because like, the plays and the production companies are local.
Lots of them. Some of them this year are from far away.
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
I didn't know.
Yeah. Oh, as a matter of fact, our friend from California was there with one of the musicians for The Alchemist Bargain.
That's crazy. I didn't know that.
It is super nuts. So.
Never mind.
I think that's one of the ones that is from abroad. Far away.
Well, they're also doing Dealing with Dragons, which I could go on for hours about.
Sure.
There's a puppetry show called Dealing with Dragons that's going to be going up in January, I want to say.
Yeah. So if you like YA fantasy adventure.
It's also one of the first ones that I can remember reading from like the 80s that's a princess being like, fuck this normity shit. I don't want to be a princess. I'm going to go and volunteer to be a dragon's princess.
Yeah.
It is a beloved book of mine, and I'm so sad that I missed the audition. I'm so sad that I missed that. But I digress. Which is the point of your podcast. But
you know. Kind of, yeah. Yeah. So Twin Cities Horror Fest links will be in the show notes. Yee. And you still, by the time this podcast comes out, you will still have several days, but very few seats. So yeah. If any of the shows that Jenna talked about last week are of interest, or if you have not yet listened to last week's, go to the website.
Oh,
look at the stuff.
There's another one. I was going to be a part of Campfire Stories, and ooh, I wasn't able to this year, but I'm hoping to next year. It is all in-person experiences with the supernatural, mm-hmm. and they are all told by phenomenal storytellers from the Twin Cities. I know Duck's doing it. I know Nyss is doing it. I know like just a bunch of people who are doing their own spoken word pieces about the supernatural. Mm-hmm. And so I highly, highly, highly suggest that.
And as always, I'm hoping to catch Reverend Matt, who is always a good time as well. So that, me too. Along with the Winding Sheet outfit as a collaboration. All right. Good. Yeah.
Good. Excellent.
Fanboy screaming. Cool. Salsa, do you want to take a break?
Yeah, let's do that.
It's also been doing so much of the heavy lifting in this section.
I know.
Yeah, I know. I'm exhausted.
So you got to rest your voice, honey.
Yep.
All right.
If you guys like what you heard, you can visit us on our website at aonpodcast.com. If you want to talk to us directly, you can send us an email at either Jenna, Salsa, or James at aonpodcast.com or collectively at feedback@aonpodcast.com.
Hey everybody, you should like us on Facebook, apropos of nothing. You could follow us on Twitter at AON Podcast, or you could join our Steam group at AON Podcast. Search for apropos of nothing.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, what just, do you mean by that?
Just like sort of laissez-faire, but more
laissez-faire.
I was going to say, this is salsa.
Blasé-faire?
But this is salsa.
I know.
So it's fondazé-faire.
No, well, it hasn't been fondazé for 8 years.
Fondazé-adjacent. Not okay. Fondazé proper.
Look, you're married to one of them.
Yeah, but I haven't been fondazé for 8 years.
Yeah.
But you're married to one of them.
But I have not been fondazé for a fucking long time.
It sounds like a much deeper hurt in conversation that I might not want to be a part of, personally.
All right. What does this mean?
What's the score, by the way?
Oh, apparently apropos of nothing is level 1.
What?
What?
I was looking at Discord, and next to apropos of nothing, there was like a level 1, 2 boosts, and I clicked on it, and it was like, level 1, we get 100 emoji slots, 24 soundboard slots, animated server icon. Better. What is all of this?
That's just because I have a paid Discord account for multiple reasons, and that most means that the servers that I begin or the servers that I belong to have like special things.
Cool.
Yeah,
I don't know. None of my problem.
No, the hockey score.
Huh?
Oh, honey, you're tired. Let's get this over with.
Hockey game's been over for a long time. Get with the program.
So, what's the score?
There is no score. It's over. It ended. No longer a score.
I thought you said that there was a hockey game tonight. I was confused.
Well, there's a lot of hockey games. There's like seven of them.
Alla Moraine,
Florida and Buffalo was 5-2. Edmonton, Columbus was 1-6. Nashville and Tampa Bay was 2-3. Chicago and Colorado is 3-2. San Jose and Utah is 1-3. Carolina and Vancouver is tied at 1.
You're happy.
Calgary and Vancouver is 0-1.
I hope you're happy now.
Calgary and Vancouver.
Yeah.
Hope you're happy that you've heard the hockey
New
score.
York.
No, it was Carolina and Vancouver, Calgary and Vegas.
Yeah, how dare you?
Okay. Thanks.
Cool. Glad I could clear that up for you.
Uh-huh. Are we doing a fast five?
No.
Cool.
Not yet, anyway.
Mm.
Is Craig back? Oh, he is. Okay.
Yep.
Eating a metal dick.
And we're back. I'm Salsa.
I'm James.
I'm Jax.
There we go. And it's time for a fast five.
Fast five.
There we go. You did something right.
Woo!
Yeah, James.
Aw. I'll mark it on the calendar.
Today's fast five comes to us from... the owner. I will say, by the way, we do have a portion of the Fast Five questionnaire that says, is this a time sensitive Fast Five? So should we jump this one to the top of the line? Well, we got three of them that said, yes, this is time sensitive. And all of them were basically this week.
Just doing our best then.
It's like me and my school assignments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like I'm going to turn them all in now.
Or my tickets at work.
Yeah.
So all three of these are at the top of the queue.
Yes.
That doesn't mean we're going to get to all three tonight. They're just at the top of the queue. Yeah. So for those of you who sent this in saying, yes, this is time sensitive, do it now. And aren't the owner. We do apologize. Yeah. You are at the top of the list.
Yes.
Just not the top of the list.
Yes.
So, yeah. But I figured the owner was one that needed to really be tonight because the owner will be back next week.
Yeah.
Shit. You need to do your homework before the teacher gets back.
Yeah. Exactly. So time sensitive. Yes. So opening thoughts. Mm. Please don't break the podcast while I'm gone.
Fuck.
I make no promises.
Yeah.
All right. Fast five, question number one.
Mm.
Mind or matter?
Ooh.
Hmm.
I'm going to say matter because I would love to be able to manipulate matter more than mind right now. Given my having energy deficiency, I would love to be able to manipulate matter more than mind.
Mm.
Do you?
You're not going to go full Charles Xavier?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, the thing is, Charles can manipulate a lot of things. You know? Yeah, are you saying this because
like
I'm a
my heart?
Ooh.
What?
Are you saying Charles Xavier because I'm a wheelchair user?
Yes.
God damn it. Nice.
Fuck.
Yeah, well, that's fair. What if it's
who are you talking to?
Which do you find more upsetting? Physical horror of like bodily viscera and blood and guts and gore, or is it more upsetting when it's psychological horror with no on-screen blood? And I would say the thing you cannot see is more upsetting.
Yeah. mind. So is I would say
mind.
Okay.
Yeah. No, the reason Jaws was so good is because it was mind, not because they showed the shark. Mm-hmm. Once they showed the shark. I mean, also, I'm a sword swallower. That is literally mind over matter. You have to overcome your body's physical responses to things. That is just how you do the job. Mind.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Question number two.
Ding.
Show or sudden?
Show. I don't like jump scares. I'd rather see it coming.
Yeah, I think that slow burn of seeing what's coming, but it's inevitable.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is way more effective than relying on jump scares.
Yeah.
And plus, then it gives, I don't want to use the word consent, but it gives the ability for somebody who like doesn't want to actually see the thing to close their eyes or to look down or things like that. So like I sometimes enjoy people asked, do you want a spoiler? Sometimes I really do want the spoiler. I want to know who dies in a TV show ahead of time.
They will ask, does this person die?
Does this person die? Because that helps me to enjoy the rest of the media way more because I know who to give my heart to and who to like rely on.
Yeah.
But
always give your important materia to Eris.
Well, and like the thing is like I know I enjoy it better that way personally.
Yeah.
I enjoy it way more than being suddenly jumped by somebody dying.
Well, and there's a whole website. Does the dog die? Yeah.
And so like some people just want people to hurt about it. And I'm like, I think it should be a choice personally. So show.
I think that that horror comes from tension. Like real honest fear comes from tension versus like a lot of people can give you just cheap jump scares. And for a long time, that was what we saw in horror movies in like the late 90s and early 2000s. Jump scares were a big giant thing. So I would say, I think show. You see the thing, you know what's going to happen, you are powerless to stop it. That's fucking horror.
Cool. So all show, no tell?
Seems to be. All right, question number three.
Ding!
A or V?
A or V? Audio or video? Audio or visual?
Yeah.
Audio. Tell me that if you find yourself being too scared of horror, mute it.
There have been numerous studies where they have shown video and then have changed the emotional state of it just by playing different music over the top of it. This is a well documented. Like psychological phenomena.
Yeah. Well, and a big part of feeling grossed out by, you know, like I said, blood and guts and viscera and all that stuff is visual, but a huge part of it, in the same way that a large part of your ability to taste is in your ability to smell, your ability to experience horror through your eyes is in your ability to hear. Mm-hmm. And so sound effects are at least as important as visual effects.
Ah, but if there is no audio, suddenly,
yes,
the visual becomes more dynamic.
I think that that's still an audio effect.
I'm trying to be contrary here because I know you're supposed to have multiple people thinking multiple things. So I'm saying, if the audio is cut, then sometimes the visual can be more potent.
Either that or the question could be ass or vagina.
Vagina. Moving on.
Okay.
All right. Interesting view into your minds there. Question number four.
It's only gonna get worse the more we're married.
Yep.
Salsa or James?
I fucking knew it.
James.
Salsa.
The answer is never salsa.
When do they say ribs? Never.
Say ribs. I'm sorry, salsa. I'm like contractually obligated to say James. Like, there's a whole
ring. Why are you apologizing? I just said the answer is never salsa.
I literally just said
it's not me.
It might be who dies first, and the answer doesn't
is never salsa.
Because he is the sweet boy.
I was going to say, who talked the most this episode, and it's probably going to be me. So,
I mean, that's fair.
Unfortunately, James.
I think there
which
are
is my 90s sitcom.
Multiple ways for this to be, and it most of the answers are you.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. So, James.
All right.
That was easy.
Okay. Yeah. No arguments there. Question number five.
Five.
Ding.
James or salsa?
Ooh.
Mm. I'm going to go with salsa on this one.
I want to point out.
Yes.
Yes.
In question four, salsa or James?
Yes.
Both salsa and James were capitalized.
Oh.
In question five, James is capitalized, but salsa is not.
Ooh. Salsa. Then.
The answer is never salsa.
But what about the time that it is?
Salsa is more red. Salsa has been at more comedy shows.
Salsa is also the sneaking thing lurking in the background with the uncapitalized letter.
Well, salsa is a condiment.
It's true.
Yeah. So I think just...
salsa.
I'm going to choose salsa because almost everybody loves chips and salsa. I don't know many people who want chips and James.
I
do not like chips and salsa.
I'm going to love if Jenna knew exactly how this was going to go.
Oh, probably.
Like...
I think she is smarter than both of us put together.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, with
that's why we spare. The podcast.
And she's smart.
Yeah.
All right. Going with finding out what this is all about. Question number one, mind or matter? Do you prefer psychological horror,
Molly,
or spaghetti with a lot of blood and guts?
I like psychological horror much more than I like spaghetti with a bunch of blood and guts.
Mm-hmm.
Saw was one of my first horror movies, and I didn't like it.
Yeah.
And I continue not to like it. So, like, psychological, definitely.
I mean, I do not like horror that is well documented, but at least psychological horror has some artistic merit.
Mm.
Whereas blood and guts is just... I guess there's gore.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. At least there's a story behind it if it's psychological.
Somebody had to put some thought into it as opposed to, I don't know, throw some more blood on it.
Right, exactly.
So
where I feel like Eli Roth tried to be psychological with Saw and failed. It's just torture porn. It's just...
I think... he might have tried, but like, and granted, there's the wanting to see people like, there is an element of psychological horror of choosing which one to go with.
Yeah.
But the main point is the physical horror that comes.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if you've ever seen the movie Hard Candy, That movie will fuck you up for the rest of your life.
Thanks for the warning.
Yeah.
No. Oh no, that movie will fuck you up because
like it's a good movie, but also
and there's no blood or gore at all. But you, like years later, decades later, I'm like, nope. So yeah. Easy answer there
with you. Yeah.
All right. Question number two: show or sudden? Do you prefer that slowly builds? I think there was a word that missed here. Do you prefer that slowly builds or something with lots of jump scares?
Slowly builds, I think what we had all said, which goes along the lines of us all saying psychological horror.
Absolutely.
We have a type here on this podcast, it seems.
Yep.
Today.
Yeah, no. Question number three, A or V, which do you think contributes more to a horror environment, audio or visual? I think we absolutely knew what we were doing with that one.
Yep.
All right. Question number four, Salsa or James? Who's more likely to wet themselves with fear?
My job was making other people wet themselves with fear.
Actually, don't know.
I don't see either of us.
No.
I don't know.
No. I
would say if I had a bunch of beer and I had to pee anyway, and I'm just like, you know what? I'm gonna get through this last part of the haunted hayride, and somebody sincerely surprised me. That could happen.
But you've worked as a haunt.
Yeah,
is the thing.
Yeah, which is kind of a problem when you walk into a room and you doors and corners it, and you're like, oh, hi. Yeah, you look up and you're like, hey, they're up on the ceiling. Cool. That's a great hiding spot. you know who's afraid of clowns? The people behind me. But
I think that's a hard...
Yeah,
both of us are way too practical and appreciative of the art rather than really getting invested in the emotional part of it.
I would say if I had to go anyway, I could be startled into peeing.
You had a full bladder.
I'm betting that could happen.
It could happen.
Yeah. So I would say,
I think either one of us, if we had a full bladder and got jump scared, might wee a little bit. But I think again, both of us would immediately after go, oh, that was really well done.
Well done. Yeah.
Yeah. Good job. Right. High five, dude. That was really good. Good job. You nailed it.
Make sure you wash your hands.
So haunted hay rides are not my thing. Like, That's not my thing. But when I went, I was so dissociated and looking at it from a theater perspective that somebody came up behind me, like right here, and I just kind of like nuzzled into them. Because I was like, oh, this is so nice.
Oh, button.
Oh, fest.
Yeah. But then that's, by the way, for other people who are horror averse, another recommended way, other than just turning off the sound, another recommended way to deal with it is to analyze what you're seeing for how they did the special effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, obviously, in recent films, it's usually like, oh, okay, that's computer generated.
They did fucking CGI.
That's easy.
Yeah.
But especially in like older movies, you're like, how did they get that person in there? How did they get the hand to come out of that? And it becomes really fucking fascinating. Or like, wow, look at the makeup they did on that. That's incredible.
It's kind of the same thing with stunts. Like, as soon as I did stage combat and started learning about the stunts community and things, like, looking at Fall Guy was so fun.
Oh,
because
wow,
I could see, right, it's so much fun, like, even if you don't know stunts, but, like, same kind of thought of, like, oh, I wonder how much gelatin to this that they used for
in
this
in order to
blood.
Light that guy on fire.
Right.
Yeah, right.
But, like, even with horror, it's like, I wonder what kind of worms they used. Oh, was it gelatin? How much of this or that? And did they use dye?
Imagine getting to be the person who made the prop of that person's head that blew up.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, like, looking at it from that, like, artistic point of view is a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Yeah. I can't not look at it that way.
Yeah.
I'm just not able. Like, I have tried doing things like haunted houses or Renaissance festivals or things like that. I've tried to go in and just been like, I'm just going to sit and enjoy it. And I can't.
Yeah.
It's that whole burden of knowledge thing. I know too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were saying like you went to a circus and then they were about to do a fire act and both you and Raider Lee looked at each other and were like, I smell fuel. Yeah. Like, so we knew the torches, you were like, there it is.
Yeah. We knew what was going to happen long before it happened. Cause we can't turn it off.
Yeah. I personally can't, like, I've been to a couple of local Renaissance festivals, not as Armine, and it's fucking weird, and I don't like it.
It's weird not to participate.
It's weird not to, like, look at other people and be like, oh, here's an opportunity. Let me thief from you. Like, or let's do something. I'm not getting paid. But it's really hard to walk into those spaces and not automatically be deconstructing them.
Yeah. Well, just like,
and even when entertainers come up and try to entertain at me, I'm so much more interested in their approach and their style and what they're doing and how they're doing it that I can't just exist with them.
But then
just have such a hard
time with it. Talking about someone surprising him by doing magic for him as a magician instead of magic for him as an audience member.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. What was it called? The Magical Mystery Tour that Penn and Teller did. Such a good documentary. Cause I don't know if you've ever seen it, Jax, but you should definitely do it. Cause he's talking about he's in Egypt and somebody is doing the cups and balls routine. And he says, you know, they did the cups and balls and the guy was like, where is the ball? And he says, I pointed at a cup and he lifted the cup and the ball was there. And it was the most amazing thing he had ever seen. Because if he was doing magic, the ball shouldn't be there. But it was.
Yeah, he realized that under the obvious feints and moves that the guy was doing, that there was a whole second layer that was entirely about that guy marking him as a magician. In the crowd.
Well, I mean, he's fucking Teller. You knew. He knew who he was. It's Teller. Right. But it was, he was like, I saw the guy do the thing. He did the move. But he didn't do the move.
Yep.
He made it look like he did the move.
So he played along to be an obvious, like a
he made the obvious, this is what a mark would say.
Yeah.
And that's where, and the ball was there. And it was, he was, so, definitely go see it because it is, there is a deconstruction of three layers of psychology happening in this one little thing.
But
and it is the most amazing. Oh.
As a performer, if Jacques the Whipper stumbled into my circle as Armine to be thieved and didn't know and like, came up and shook my hand because that's a good shtick.
Right.
I would be so excited. You know, like I would be so excited. Or even if it wasn't Jacques the Whipper, if it was somebody like another Fessy or even you, it was like,
low the bar is.
See, if you, I wouldn't
pulled into my thieving circle, my circle. And for the audience who doesn't know, as Armine at the Renaissance Festival, I draw a circle in the dirt. And if somebody walks into it, I say, la, 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 come back, come back, come back. And I tell them, hello, I am Armine. What are you? Blah, blah, blah. I've trapped you and I am robbing you. What are you going to give me? compliments, jokes, little piece of paper, shinies. What are you going to give me? And I hold out my hat or my hand, and people turn out their fucking pockets for me.
Yeah, they've gotten flashlights. I've gotten foreign currency,
chocolate.
Yu-Gi-Oh cards.
Lots of jokes, and
several children.
But I also several wives. And so I like. But the thing is, they get to choose what they give me when they get robbed at the Renaissance Festival, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, but if I were to do that to you, you walked into my circle and you went, "That's a really good bit. Well done." And I would just flutter because it's another performer seeing that I did something cool, right?
Well, and sometimes that's the point of the thing in, like,
But then again, that compliment is the thing that is being given to you, so it's still within the
I mean,
the,
yes, also that.
No. But like, even outside of
the if I'm not in costume, if I'm being a patron and I meet Jacques the Vipper, I don't want him to entertain at me. I want him to go backstage with me and talk about performance theory for the next 3 hours.
See, that's what I want. I was saying about the celebrity like hall pass list. I don't want to sleep with them. I want to have beer with them.
I would want to do both with Jacques the Whipper, but that's beside the point.
Yeah.
Let's be clear.
Yeah.
Dude's man pretty. Let's just say it.
Very pretty.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
There.
Yeah.
There.
Anyway, what were we saying? Oh, yeah. So James would wet himself.
Let's go with that.
All right. Question number 5.
Ding.
Who is more likely to be the lone survivor of a horror show?
James.
I have like a preternatural luck.
He's a golden retriever.
Also that.
And the dog doesn't die. Don't want the dog to die.
And sometimes the dog does.
I'm going to say James just because I would piss people off and they would sacrifice me.
long before everyone trapped in the cave was hungry, they were like, "You know who we should eat?"
I think both James and I are farm kids. We both have know-how. We both have technical abilities. We both know what we're doing with weaponry.
James has charisma.
I mean, Salsa has charisma.
It's a different kind of charisma. But no, I think at the end of the day, I would get cocky and make a mistake. I would lose focus. Mm. Oh, James would lose focus too. Oh.
It's already working. I can hear what's happening next to me. Yeah.
This was going to be very obvious for me, is that I was going to get cocky and lose focus, and that's when I would get caught. And then I just suddenly realized, wait, James is also not good at focus.
Shit. I think you should rock, paper, scissors for it.
No, I still think James. I would get cocky. I would push my luck.
Off your mouth? Bit.
I would push my luck one too many times.
I could see that. I also could see the easy cinematic death of somebody poisoning your sword.
I mean, that...
Well, now we know that you've been thinking about this.
Shut up. It's a very cinematic beat of, hey, we're at a party, some things are happening, but I still need to go up and do my thing. And then you swallow your sword, which is the dangerous thing, but it wasn't the swallowing the sword. It was
I just want to point out that nobody gets fucking close to my swords.
Oh, I understand, but this is a movie.
No, I know. I'm just saying my swords
are
locked up.
Now Salsa has a new thing to worry about.
No, I'm not worried about it. I'm just saying my swords are under lock and key. Nobody fucking touches my swords.
Yeah.
Because,
but I'm just saying, like,
because I literally can poison myself if any other people do touch my shit.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's not even like a joke. That is just if somebody gets their grubby mitts on my sword, I can literally poison myself with
that. Sounds awful.
Yeah. So, oh yeah, my swords, they get sanitized frequently.
Yeah, because we know where they've been.
Yeah.
But if we're talking about like horror shows or horror movies or things that have like specific beats to it.
I feel like if I was in a horror movie, I don't think I'd stop and swallow a sword, but that's just me, maybe.
I feel like it would come down to one of two things. Either I would accidentally observe the thing happening
and get targeted
and be like, oh, okay, there's a sword in the corner behind me, I should just grab that. Or that it would be some supernatural thing, and I would be like, let's not touch that book bound in human flesh with a screaming mouth on the cover. And Sals would be like, don't be so fucking superstitious. Opens. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it's, again, the answer is never salsa.
Oh.
I understand that it looks like I'm biased, and it's only because I am.
Yeah.
It's, you're not biased. It's the correct answer.
Okay. Well, there's that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a really fun Fast Five.
Yeah. Yeah,
indeed. So closing thoughts. No, really, don't break anything. If you would like to send in a Fast Five, go to aonpodcast.com, click on submit a Fast Five, and fill out the form. It's really fucking easy to do. You just type a few things and hit send. It's that fucking simple. Does anybody have a shout out?
I
do. I would like to say thank you to a lot of different people, but in particular, thank you to everyone who helped us to clean and to make food and everything else. It's having a bunch of people over is always such a huge endeavor.
For a over the garden wall party.
Yes.
To specify, because we hadn't.
Right.
Yeah.
So, thank you to everyone who helped us clean and make food and stuff for the party. That was incredible, and the food was delicious, and I just appreciate the hell out of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Salsa.
I'm going to give my shout-out to my wife of 15 years.
Nah, gross.
Yep, what do you got, Jax?
Is this where we plug the shit that we're in, or is this different?
No, this is where we do shout-outs.
Okay. Yeah. Shout out to Duck for being like, yeah, let's figure this shit out together for this show, even though it is a very unknown. I super appreciate that, and I love it. So shout out to Duck Washington.
Yeah, he's a person of great quality.
Yee.
All right. Does anybody have anything to plug?
I do. Okay, so Fractured Remembrances at the Twin Cities Horror Festival. The Twin Cities Horror Festival is going on until next Sunday. The Fractured Remembrances are happening tomorrow, Tuesday, October 29th at 9 p.m. It is also happening on Friday, November 1st at 10:30 p.m. And it is happening on Sunday, November 3rd at 6 p.m. Come and see our wonderful, fantastic show. And make sure to look at the Goblin Market for fun stickers. One of my stickers is even glow in the dark.
Nice.
Yes.
I do have something to plug. I will be putting the URL into the show notes as well. But Vilification Tennis has a brand new website. It's very simple, it's easy to navigate, and you can go there and see things. It is vil10.net. That's it. VILTEN.net. yeah, see information about our upcoming shows, and get a link to go to the theater to buy tickets ahead of time because it's cheaper.
All right. I have nothing to plug. I'm done. Done for the year. That's Woo! What I know. Does anybody have any final thoughts?
Bye-bye. Love you. Bye-bye.
In that case, thank you so much to everybody who listens to this.
I have a final thought.
What is your final thought?
It'll come after whatever Solstice says.
Nope. What's your final thought?
Yeah.
All right. Oh, yeah. Have a good Samhain, everybody.
Yes.
Yeah.
Happy Samhain.
Bye. Love you. Bye.
All right. In that case, thank you, everybody who listens to this podcast. Thank you, Jenna, for sending in that Fast Five for us. It was an absolute delight. Mm-hmm. On behalf of thank you to Jax for being our guest today. Mm-hmm. On behalf of myself and James and Jenna, eat the fucking cake.
Come here, my rubber orangutan. Let me feel your nipples.